Hey, this is Micah. Before we get into part two of Marketing Malpractice, Creating Purpose Brands, I wanted to just say to you, thank you so much if you've subscribed to the Common Sense Show on YouTube. Also, if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast platform, don't forget to give us 5 stars, rate and review this. It's imperative that we have your review or that you subscribe so we can get this content out to as many small business owners and entrepreneurs as possible to help them grow their brand. So today we're going to go into part two of Marketing Malpractice, Creating a Purpose Brand. If you haven't already heard part one, which is Marketing Malpractice, the job to be done, then you should go back and listen to that first before you come listening to this one, because we're going to just build off of what we talked about last time. Before we get into the information for part two of Marketing Malpractice, I'm Michael Logan. This is The Common Sense Show.
You're listening to The Common Sense Show, the game-changing podcast dedicated to helping entrepreneurs and small business owners grow past $200,000 in revenue by building rock-solid systems, processes, and operational strategies. Host Micah Logan delivers impactful interviews and insights to help you level up and grow your bottom line. Here's your host, Micah Logan.
Okay, welcome to the show. And as I mentioned before the break, we're going to talk about how you can, part two of Marketing Malpractice, Creating a Purpose Brand. And so before we get started with how you can create a purpose brand, I first want to define what a purpose brand is so that you can understand what you're looking for in creating a purpose brand. So, when new markets are created, when innovative companies design a product or service and position it for which no optimal solution yet exists. So basically, when you're creating a purpose brand, you're creating a brand around a product or service for which no optimal solution currently exists, meaning that the person who is going to come to your business and either buy a product or engage in a service needs to understand what job your product or service is actually filling to be done. When you create a company, either a product or service that fills the gap in the marketplace and is attached to something that a person needs to do, and there's no solution for it, you have created a purpose brand. So today, I'm going to start by giving you a few examples of purpose brands or products so that you can kind of understand the concept, and then we're going to go from there. So let's talk about 1860. 1860s was the year when a well-known brand was established, Arm & Hammer. You know Arm & Hammer, they're the company that makes baking soda. Not the only company that makes baking soda. When you think about baking soda, you think about Arm & Hammer. There was a man named Deturchin Dwight who used the job to be done strategy in order to grow their brand, Arm & Hammer, which was in the market since the 1860s. So what happened? So back for about 100 years, that baking soda brand existed. Arm & Hammer baking soda existed. So from 1860s to 1960s. And then in the 1960s, they started, Barry Goldblatt started, it indicated that there was research that was done. The company started researching the diverse ways in which customers found themselves interacting with the product Arm & Hammer. And so what they noticed after doing some market research about how companies interacted with baking soda, that their customers were using it in various ways. So some were using it to mix in toothpaste, others were sprinkling it on the carpet, others were placing it in the refrigerator. There were so many jobs that baking soda was used for that people hired it to do that it gave them an idea of what exactly or how exactly baking soda, their version of baking soda, was viewed in the marketplace. The issue, though, is that single product that they had in the marketplace wasn't giving the customers the guidance that they needed. So when it came to growing in their purpose brand of baking soda, they had to address the thought about how people were using baking soda in various ways, and then start focusing on advertising the job in specific areas of use that their customers were using it. So what they started doing was creating advertisements around, for instance, toothpaste, and how it made their mouth feel fresh and clean, how how baking soda can go in the fridge or the freezer and to help the deodorize it, and how Arm & Hammer could go into deodorant to help your arm stay fresh and clean, how you can use Arm & Hammer baking soda as a deodorizer for the carpet. And so they started launching products off of the uses that their customers actually had, because there were so many different uses of this. It was the right time for them to take their purpose brand, seeing how their customers were interacting with the job that their product did, and to expand that into different verticals that their company could use and leverage. And now you see products with baking soda in them all the time. So Arm & Hammer would be an example of a purpose brand that is a product that there was no optimal solution for solving certain issues at the time. The consumer, and by the company actually engaging their customers to see how they used it, what they did was they were able to do this research, this market research, to really propel their product launches off of their main brand. Another purpose brand that was invented was Kodak's success with the single-use camera. And the single-use camera became a disruptive technology. And here's how. So the proposition was basically for Kodak to launch a single-use camera that could capture moments just like a regular camera, but prevent a person from bringing their camera either on vacation with them or them ruining it, an expensive camera that they had, or if they forgot the camera at home, what were they going to do? So what happened was Kodak invented, and you may remember them, those single-use cameras inside of a cardboard box that a customer could use when they were going away. And so there was a little internal dialogue about whether this was a useful tool to use. But if you've ever used a Kodak single-use camera, then you know that how useful they actually became, for especially for tourists who were on vacation. So what job did people hire the Kodak single-use camera to actually do? Well, it basically, what they did was they hired it when they needed to save money, to save memories of a fun time. So oftentimes that Kodak single-use camera became widely available in tourist destinations. And so what they did was they created this brand of the single-use camera with the job of helping customers capture memories even if they've forgotten their own personal camera. And so what it did was it helped to endorse the Kodak brand when it came to photography, because people were using, they were associating fun times on vacation with the use of a Kodak single-use camera, or the name Kodak in general. So it really allowed them to be able to leverage memories with Kodak. And so that's what the purpose brand does. They disrupted the camera marketplace by having these single-use cameras, and it was etched into the mind of the consumers who were actually using it. And so there's another example of Akio Morita. Now, Akio Morita was the founder of Sony. Now, his approach to disruptive innovation, which is a part of creating a purpose brand, was to spend time watching what people were trying to get done in their lives, and then simply asking their customers how they could help them do what they want to do better, easier, and cheaper. So think about this. Sony is a big company still, obviously, it's huge. But as they were growing Sony, they wanted to know how people interacted with everyday items or everyday experiences. And so they took a reverse approach. So when they were trying to engineer products for their customers, they first wanted to see, well, how are customers, what are customers doing on a daily basis that actually they need help with? And then they created products based off of that. So that's a very interesting reverse engineering way to go about actually creating products. But they were specialists in miniature technology at the time, miniature technology and engineering. And so had they looked at their product development in the traditional way, what they would have done is they simply would have analyzed the trends in the marketplace and the number of tape players, Walkmans, or whatever were on the market out there. And what they would have found was that, oh, there's, you know, 50 million people using a Walkman or a, you may not know what the Walkman is if you're a little younger, you know, that portable tape player or a portable Walkman where you can listen to music to. But instead, they always stayed a step ahead of their product development by monitoring what customers wanted to do easier in their daily lives. And they created technology around that. Now, there was another example that they gave in the white paper about creating a brand that customers will actually hire on a regular basis. And one of the other brands it talks about was FedEx. Now, the U.S. Postal Service has been around forever, for a long time. And people often hired the U.S. Postal Service to get things from one place to the other. People would also hire couriers, like physical couriers, to bring things from one place to the other. And in some cases, to bring packages on planes, to personally fly them to other countries and to hand them to people because whatever was in that package was of the utmost importance. But imagine the price tag on what it would cost to actually send a person and a package across the ocean or wherever you want it to go to ensure proper delivery of that package or product. It would be insane to do that right now because the cost of doing so would be extraordinary. So what were customers looking for? They were looking for the, I need to send this from here to there with perfect certainty as fast as possible. And so FedEx basically saw an opportunity to come in and create a purpose brand. So they designed their service to do exactly that job, and they did it wonderfully. But here's the thing, they did it again and again. They began popping into people's minds whenever they needed to get the job of, I need to send this package from here to there and know what's going to get there every single time. And it just stuck in their consumers' minds. And so their name became inextricably linked with the fact that they got these packages safely to their destination. And FedEx is huge. FedEx is even a verb. People ask you, did you FedEx that? Or I need you to FedEx this to this place. Or did you, I'm not sure if there's any other brand that does what FedEx does, and you may have to think for yourself, that actually gets a product or package from one place to another that uses this name as the verb, right? I think FedEx is the only one. And so the great brands, though, that have done what FedEx did, typically have their name associated with the action of the product or service. Kleenex. People don't say, oh, can you pass me a piece of nose-blowing tissue? They say, can you pass me a Kleenex? Kleenex is just a brand of tissue that you can use to blow your nose. Can you pass me a Kleenex? It's been inextricably linked with the product. eBay, Kodak, like we just talked about. These are companies, Google, these are companies that have created products and services that never existed before, or they found holes or ways to utilize those holes in the marketplace to get a job done that people were looking to hire. Now, your brand equity, when you create a purpose brand, can be absolutely destroyed if you don't tie the brand to a purpose. If you just build a general brand as a business, and you don't tie a purpose to it, there's going to be no reason for customers to think about whether they should hire that brand to do a job or not. If you are general in your marketing and your advertising, then you're not going to actually reach the people effectively that you want to reach in order to come to increase your market share. So think about the example I gave earlier about baking soda, right? So if Arm & Hammer had never re-establish their position in the marketplace about the various jobs that people hire baking soda to do, and if they hadn't been in the front of the mind of people when it came to actually how you can use baking soda in various applications, then it's possible that that company wouldn't even exist right now. But because they changed their advertising strategy to focus on what different types of jobs people hire this our brand to do, not only are they the number one baking soda company in the world, but they're also historically, they've been around since the 1860s. They've been around forever. So it creates longevity, and it creates fans in the business as well. Advertising a purpose brand is really key. Getting the advertising right, nailing down how to talk to people who are looking to hire your product or service to do a specific thing. And in order to illustrate that, I have an example for you that was in the white paper that I'm kind of addressing that I use to talk about marketing malpractice, both this episode and the previous one as well. So there was an Asian operator of a soup brand, and it's called Unilever, and they made soups. And so what they noticed is that in the office, many office workers around 4 p.m. in the afternoon were getting drained physically and emotionally because they were just getting drained by their work schedule. And so people were looking for a little pick-me-up and productivity to get through the rest of the day. And so they started hiring different products in order to solve their issue. So they hired caffeinated drinks, candy bars, they had stretch breaks, they started trying to get other things with mixed results to really wake them up in the afternoon. And so what they did initially was they had designed a microwavable soup it was specifically engineered and the properties of the soup to get the job done that the office workers needed, which is to give them a little bit of a pick-me-up, a little more energy so they can get through the rest of the day. Something nutritious, something quick, something that would get them off their butts and then back to work. and it could be consumed at the desk. So it was launched into the workplace under the brand Soupy Snacks. And the results were just mediocre. So Soupy Snacks is an interesting alliteration for a brand name, but when they started advertising Soupy Snacks, it didn't really hit home. It didn't really address the issue that people were having, which was namely that they were losing energy at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and they needed something to engage in to pick them up. And so what they did was they changed the advertising and relaunched the product when they saw the mediocre results coming in. And they renamed the brand Soupy Snacks from its previous name. And what they did was they changed the advertising. I'm looking at my notes here. And their advertising basically said, have you noticed that you lose energy at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and it's hard for you to get up and get going in the office? And people started saying, yeah, I relate to this. Like, I always lose energy around like 3:30, 4, whatever the case is. And so their advertising became a huge hit because they tied in the job that people were that needed to be done, their desire to get done, with the purpose for why that product or service, in this case, the soup, was created. And so they created this tagline to match what the product actually did for people who needed this pick me up in this advertising. So their advertising clarified the nature of the job, and it helped people to understand and realize that there actually was a job that needed to be done, and that that job affected them, right? Affected their energy. And so it's the same thing that that baking soda, that Arm & Hammer did with their baking soda. By showing people in advertisements that they can use it for various different things, they were filling these gaps in the marketplace that existed. So the question is, when you're creating your brand, if you're just starting out, or even if you're already chugging along with your business, are you advertising in a way that connects the purpose of the job of your product or service to what people need or hire you to actually do? Do you understand what the job is of your own business and why people hire you? So I've mentioned previously that you could think that people want to hire you for one reason, but it could be for something completely different. In my case, I run fitness businesses and I'm in manufacturing. And we manufacture products, soundproofing products. And do people hire our soundproofing products that we manufacture in one of my businesses to try to just have something that they can use to quiet down the noise from the outside? Yes. But the question is why? Well, it's because people actually want to live in quiet enjoyment. So when we advertise, we're advertising to the fact that quiet enjoyment is not just a right of people in the US, but it also is something that is tied very closely into people's health. The person coming home with a headache after having a long day at work at 6 p.m., they just want to get home, relax, and not hear anything because they have a headache. Painting that picture in advertising is the best way to get people to relate to the brand, our brand in particular, that people have. And so advertising that attempts to short circuit this process of developing this relationship between the job and the customer and build trust is going to hurt you in the long run if you fail to do so. So you can spend a lot on marketing and be wrong, and a lot of people do and are wrong. You can spend a ton on marketing and not really get the effectiveness of what you're trying to actually convey in your marketing, and you might not see the needle move. But you need to change your tone and strategy and look at kind of what you're saying to your marketplace. And are you positioning, when you talk about your business, are you talking about it in a way where people understand that you are providing a solution, the most optimal solution to a problem that exists? If they don't understand what the solution is to the problem, then you're going to be missing the boat. So here's how we're going to tie this in a neat bow. When you're thinking about creating a purpose brand, if you're reevaluating your specific business brand, then you should be thinking about what optimal solution in the marketplace do you solve, and why do people hire you? You got to think about that. Because if you don't know why people hire you, why people want to engage with you, then you're not going to tap into the customer marketplace like you think you want to, like you should be able to do. So why are strong purpose brands so rare? Well, it's because they haven't carved out that opportunity or that ability or that connection between the emotionality, the functionality, and the sensibility of the product or service that they're offering the market, and connected that to why people need it. So I want you to do me a favor. After you finish listening to this podcast or watching it, I want you to go to your most recent marketing campaign. Look at the text, look at the images, look at how you're marketing. And I want you to answer one simple question. do I draw a straight line in this advertising between what I do and what people hire me to do? Or is your messaging not relevant at all to what your brand is? Is it more relevant to a special? Because even if you are advertising a special, that doesn't guarantee, just because you're dropping your price, that you're going to get more people to buy. They're not going to be connected to your why or to the purpose of the brand. You want people to trust your brand, because when people trust your brand, they buy over and over and over again, and they refer people to you as well. So that's our message today on purpose brands, how to build them, how to recognize them, and a few examples. And before we go, I just want to remind you that I created a business resources page for the podcast, and that business resources page is so important. If you go to thecommonsensepodcast.com, that's thecommonsensepodcast.com, and you look at the business, once you enter into the website, you just hit like listen to episodes, and then go to business resources. Then what you'll see there is I put up a library of my favorite books in business that I believe that you should read annually. There's about four of them. And I've also put in there some services that you could use in your business to make sure that your business is running optimally. So there's a section for website hosting. There's a section for banner, for like banners and signage and marketing collateral and materials. Check all that stuff out. There's also in there now, we've partnered with Gusto, which is a HR portal. They can do all your payroll for you, all your payroll needs. And they do it automatically. They work in all 50 states. They understand what the payroll requirements and laws are in your state. You should check them out, and you should use them if you haven't set up payroll, because I can tell you this, on one of the future podcasts, I speak to a payroll company, a payroll expert, and he goes in very deeply into why it's important to set up payroll and what the IRS thinks about what happens when we don't properly classify your employees and what the penalties are. So check out Gusto. It's already there. It doesn't cost much money, and you can be compliant in any state in the U.S. if you check them out. Thank you for listening today. Don't forget to subscribe, hit that notification bell. And if you're listening to this on audio, make sure you leave a 5-star review and share this podcast with people who you know are starting a business. Continue to listen. We're going to continue to develop those systems and processes in your business to help you add an additional $200,000 in revenue to your business. And above all things, use your common sense in business, and your business will grow. But for now, I'm out of here. It's time for the weekend. See you later.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Common Sense Show, hosted by Michael Logan. The producer for The Common Sense Show is Paul Logan. To reach out to Micah and The Common Sense Show, talk to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search The Common Sense Show. And if you enjoy the show, please don't forget to rate and or review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Thank you for listening.